News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 5th of June, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you may realize we don't have Dave Enright with us. He's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. Hopping from train to train as he tries to get away from
us.
Us, or well, I was thinking Tommy Lee Jones, but it could be us. But we will bring you news and views and stuff you can use. We're going to talk a little bit about the new look to the website. We're going to talk about cool stuff that's going on in the world. Today, you should know, while the rest of the world celebrates the fact that today is the date, is the anniversary of the day in 1989, that a lone individual stood in front of a column of advancing tanks in Tiananmen Square and held them up for about half an hour. We in the geek world are celebrating the fact that on this day, in 1977, the Apple II first went on sale. And the crowd goes wild. This is a big day for us, 1977, the Apple II. First goes on sale.
Revolutionary concepts, had a built-in keyboard plugged into your television. It was amazing at the time.
It was an all-in-one computer.
Yeah.
That and the Commodore PET were about it at that point.
And when we had Steve Wozniak in town a couple years ago for the CIDR anniversary, he was talking about hooking the computer up to your television. It's no big deal today. You know, your TV's got a jack on it.
Right.
You know, before that, you had to go down to like Radio Shack and buy a $20 adapter.
I used to sell computers back in those days. And we sold more of those TV adapters for like $20, which in those days was a lot of money, actually. For $20, they had a round core magnet that you had to wrap the wires around in order to prevent any sort of radio frequency interference from completely screwing up every other device in your home.
Yep.
But, yeah, and then you'd plug it into the TV and retune everything, and you had to attach it to the same leads that your antenna. Remember antennas?
The antenna.
Yeah, you had to attach it to the antenna leads, and there were a lot of fights in various households about whether we were going to play with a computer or watch television.
And before that little box was created, and this was a story Wise was telling, TVs came with circuit diagrams.
Yep,
because TVs were pretty, you know, relatively new, you know, not really that you know, big of a penetration yet. So Woz was able to take the TV apart, find the leads in the TV to tap onto, so he could push his image into the television instead of having the television pick up, you know, the broadcast image.
Right.
And it was just so radical at the time that, you know, and so with your computer, you got this little box that he pretty much invented to plug into your television.
Yep, yeah, pretty amazing stuff. Steve Wozniak, a genius. He created the Apple II. His deal was to make things with the fewest possible number of chips,
which made it cheaper and easier to manufacture. But also, it was a bragging point back then. How few chips? How few lines of code?
We've talked about that before. Dr. Dobbs was called Dr. Dobbs Journal of Computer Calisthenics and Orthodontia. Running light without overbyte, BYTE. And the whole point of the magazine was how small you could get something, how few lines of code you could do something in, how few chips you could create something with. And that was important in those days. Now, nobody really cares because we don't care about making our compilers more efficient or, you know, how much memory do you have. Just get more memory. Shut up. Just go do it. And that's the way we do things nowadays. And I suppose there's a certain amount of legitimacy to that. The reality is, you know, we talk about this a lot, but we need to reiterate it over and over and over again. When you go to buy Windows, most machines still seem to come with 128 meg as the basic amount of memory in the machine. And that's maybe a quarter of what you really need to work, because that'll load the operating system, but won't really do much else. I mean, even if you put a, if you want to put a, you got a big screen nowadays, you want to put a picture in the background, that takes many megabytes of your disks, of your RAM. If you want to run more than one program at a time, you really need more memory, and we can't harp that enough.
But that's how they get the $299 computers.
That's how they get the two, and then by the time you're done with it, you've spent, well, same thing with my little $499 Mac Mini was yep. actually an $800 computer by the time I got done adding stuff to it, but that's the way it's all done. And that's okay, that's, you know, that's the way the world works. Before we get so far off track, we're not even going to have a clue as to what we're talking about. Why don't we head right for the phones? We have a whole bunch of people on the line. And as we so often did in the old days, and we haven't heard from him in a while, we'll start with Bruce from Henrietta. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Peachy. How are you?
Hanging in there. I have quite a few, but I'll limit it to the ones that you might solve for me.
Yeah.
I have an issue with a jump drive corrupting the data, at least the appearance of the data, when I use it as a sneaker net from a PC to a Mac in 9.2.2. If I go to the Mac and I boot into 10.3.9, it sees it as it should be seen. My workaround is to just to take it off as in the 10.3.9 OS and then reboot into 9.2.2. But I was wondering if there were something that is missing, an extension that's missing, or this is what's happening. And
there's a couple of things involved with reading PC disks on a Mac, and one of them is the format of the disk. And generally for the jump drives, it's in the FAT format, maybe FAT32.
I imagine it's FAT32, yes.
On the Macintosh in OS 9, you need an extension called PC Exchange.
Right.
Which reads that FAT disk and shows it up on the desktop.
Well, what it does to the Mac files is it appends a dot underscore to it, to the name, and then it's, it says it's not a Mac file.
At the beginning or the end of the name?
The beginning. Prepends it.
That sometimes happens with OS X files. There are some invisible OS X directory files, the .ds underscore store and a couple of other .dot files. In Unix, if you precede a file name with a period, it becomes invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce, how did you originally format this drive, on the Mac or the PC?
I never formatted it. It worked out of the box.
Likely in FAT format.
Probably, yeah. Yes. Because the PC knows what to do with it, and so does the Mac side.
The other half of the PC Exchange control panel in OS 9 was file extension mapping to tell it that .doc should open in Word and .xls should open in Excel.
Right.
You may want to try deleting the PC Exchange preferences and let it rebuild that file mapping.
Okay.
But actually changing file names shouldn't be able to happen. If you mount it on an OS X machine, it will add a couple of files to it to maintain the Mac-ness. In fact, even on the OS 9 machine, you get an invisible desktop DB file that maintains the Mac-ness of the file.
Is it possible that having put it on OS X, now when it goes back to OS 9, it reads those DS store?
It will display the DS store file as a separate file now.
So they're viewable under 9.
They're not openable under 9, but it shouldn't affect the rest of the files on that disk. We did have an issue this week with an optical disk that was written under Windows. It got written in the Joliet format.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting is that 10.3 doesn't read Joliet, but 10.4 did. So the customer, he had two computers, and it worked fine on one computer and didn't work at all on the other computer and wondered what was wrong.
Wait a second. Is it Tiger it works under or Panther it works?
Tiger it worked. Tiger reads a Joliet disk. Panther
okay.
won't. So you have to use High Sierra or Rock Ridge. It's all different, you know, extensions to the ISO 9660. If you use a pure ISO disk, it worked fine. So what I might suggest is on the PC, reformat the disk in FAT format. In fact, if it isn't more than a gigabyte, use FAT and not FAT32.
Right, FAT16.
Yeah, and see if that helps when you're copying the files back and forth.
Okay, well, like I said, I have a workaround, but I was just puzzled by what was the mechanism was going on.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I've never run into that before, ever.
Well, I always keep the best one for you guys.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Well, have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bruce. You too. Keep smiling. Our next caller is Frank from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
I have a couple questions. We have two computers in the house. My wife's is used for business. Mine's used for surfing. We're thinking of networking them to save some money. The questions are, if they're both password protected right now, but can one person, if we network them, can one person get into the other ones even though they're password protected? And
if,
second,
if they use that password, they can log into the other machine.
If we don't know the password, you can't get in, right?
Well, there, it's a little more complex than that. What operating system are they running?
The average user.
We both have XP.
That helps. What happens is this. When you network two machines together, you have the opportunity to, if you have Service Pack 2, you have the opportunity of sharing or not sharing any set of files by folder, for example. So I can say you can share this folder, but not this folder.
Or you can turn off sharing completely.
Or you can turn off sharing completely, and then neither person will be able to see the other person's files at all, any of them. And if you want them, in fact, particularly if, for example, your wife's business machine, you're not allowed into it, then the best thing to do is to simply turn off file sharing entirely.
Okay.
Then you will not be able to see anything on her machine. You may be able to see that it's there, but you won't be able to share anything.
All right. Last is me surfing. If I screw up and I get a virus, which I haven't had yet, or I somehow wipe out the machine, which I haven't done yet, will that affect her machine?
Theoretically, if she's not sharing files at all, no.
Okay.
But it is Windows, and there are holes that we don't know about
yet.
You have
to worry about all the other holes that something might get through.
Right.
So it's what was it? The CIRCAM virus had its own server built.
Right.
It was only like 100K, and they had written a complete mail server in 100K. So when the CIRCAM virus got on your computer, it created its own server and started sending files out. So
right.
You have to worry about general security anyway. But
right. But yeah. Once, but if it's just in general, as long as you're not sharing files and you both got your firewalls working and all of that stuff, you should be fine. We have to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When you wake up with Tamax, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Sound Bites. I just want to make a quick shout out to number four on the give us your opinion thing on the Ask Nick website. There is a show cam up. It's right there. I'm looking at it. That's the show cam. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Peachy, thanks.
I was on the website, and Dave said to, you know, tell him what I want to get a new computer. And he said he would tell him what I wanted, and he would send me an attachment. He sent me an attachment, and I have OpenOffice, the latest version, but I can't open the attachment to get the quote he sent me.
What is the extension on the attachment?
I'm not home, so I couldn't tell you. I'm not, but, you know, he said he used Microsoft Word. And I've got Microsoft Word, and I want to use it in OpenOffice. And I tried many times, and it would not open the attachment.
Take a look at the extension and see if it ends in .pdf. It may be that you need to open it with Acrobat Reader. If you double-click on the attachment itself, what happens? If you save the attachment to your desktop.
Nothing. I open it, and nothing happens.
You should at least
click on it, nothing happens.
You should at least get an error message. It should either open or give you an error message.
Nope, I get nothing.
Well, I'm afraid Dave has a separate commitment today. He's had another commitment that he had to be at. But I can't tell you what might have happened without knowing what the extension name is. But it may simply have come through badly. That happens once in a while when you're on the Internet. So I would suggest that you email Dave back and let him know.
Okay, one more question. Have any of you people, I put it on the hardware website as Soundbites, and I've gotten a lot of comments about it, and I was just wondering, you know, I want to get a computer, and I want to do it locally, which you suggested.
Yeah.
So my question, I guess, is a very simple one. Should I get a separate sound card or video card, or should I get one that's built into the computer?
For the average person, a built-in sound, built-in video is fine. If you're a hardcore gamer, you want a separate video card so you can put a better one in next week. If you're a hardcore audio file enthusiast, you want a separate sound card to put a better one in next week. But for the average people, the built-in is just fine.
Yeah, live with the built-in. If it's some, the nice part about that is if at some later point you really feel a desperate need to upgrade, you can. It's very easy to just add one later. But there's no need to make that extra cost right away when you may be perfectly happy with what's built in. Again, if what you're using it for is word processing and spreadsheet and surfing the web, you don't really need the extra stuff. It looks like we're going to be taking another break for the news, and when we come back with Dave and Rob and me, Nick, we'll have more sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
At Vitamin.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm not Dave Enright. I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Yes, apparently in the last break I said we'd be back with Nick, Dave, and Rob, and I left out Steve, and who's here, and I put in Dave, who's not. It gets confusing.
It's just that rhythm.
You get into the rhythm. Yeah. Nick, Dave, Steve, Rob. It's just the whole thing. Yeah, it's
why
really
I always
got to
be last, though?
Because you're over there.
There's a reason for that.
Oh, okay.
It's the order in which we became associated with sound bites.
Nice try. I'm not
actually.
It. I'm
no,
not
that's
it.
True.
That's true, yeah.
Uh-huh. Nick, Dave, Steve, and, oh, yeah, Rob.
Uh-huh. Pretty much how it works. Oh, yeah, I have the buttons.
Oh, yeah, you got the right. Buttons. Yes, well, we might as well get back to the phones now. And we're going to let Steve rant. Excuse me, we're going to let Steve expound on something
interesting.
Expound on a few things. Beg your pardon.
A couple of things happened this week in the Apple world that are important for consumers to pay attention to. You may remember a few years ago there was a big fuss. What's a nice word I can use?
That's a good word.
That's a good
fuss
word.
Fuss is good.
Fuss is a good word. A couple of guys in New York.
There's a word that ends in storm that comes to mind. I don't think we'll go there.
A couple of guys in New York City started passing around and putting up posters for complaining about the Apple's iPod battery. The original Apple iPod came out in, 2001, was it?
Yeah.
And after about a year and a half, 2 years, their battery started wearing out, and so these guys were really mad about it and started class action lawsuits. Well, Apple settled the iPod class action lawsuit this week, and if you own a first, second, or third generation iPod, you won't want to go to appleipodsettlement.com, and a link is on our link list already. You may be entitled to recompense.
Up to the tune of a whopping $50.
$50, yep. Basically, what the issue was is that when Apple introduced the iPod, they said that the battery would run for about 8 hours of continuous use, and the battery would last for up to the life of the iPod. And Nick, you had a really good thing on your Ask Nick this week, explaining that up to and about are very vague terms.
Yeah.
And how
I believe I used the term weasel words, but.
And the issue is a lot on how you use your iPod. If you push play on your iPod and never touch it again, it will run 8 to 12 and now 15 hours on some of the later models. But if you're jumping back and forth and shuffling and scanning forward through the songs, you might only get 3 or 4 hours out of it.
Right, because it's the hard drive running that really takes the juice,
and the
not
way,
just simply...
Right.
And if you're just playing it, it grabs a song and sort of shuts off.
Well, yeah.
Grabs a song, shuts off.
There's a memory buffer in the iPod.
Right.
So it fills the memory, turns off the hard drive to really save on the battery life.
Right.
So, and the memory buffer is about 25, 30 minutes. And then
which is a bunch of songs.
Right.
But it only takes 10, a second or two of disk time to load that memory buffer and then shut down. So for every half hour you run it, you're only getting a second or two of disk.
In fact, that was one of the early features they were talking about. It has a 20-minute skip protection. One of the big issues in portable music players and portable CD players is if you took it jogging, it's being bounced up and down all the time. And one of my first portable CD players had a 20-second skip protection. So as long as I didn't bounce it, for 20 seconds, it was fine.
Jog stop.
So that if you used your iPod randomly and kept jumping around on songs, it drained the battery faster. And then when you were charging the battery, batteries are a consumable item. They only last for a certain number of charge cycles, which is about 500 recharges. If you play the iPod for a few hours a day, that's going to last 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
Right.
But if you start your iPod in the morning, drain it for that 8 hours, and then charge it, drain it for 8 hours and charge it, you're going to go through 500 recharge cycles in a year and a half.
I know people, students, who recharge from their laptop because the iPod is more important to them. They're listening to it all day, and in the middle of the day, they plug it into the laptop and recharge as they're doing something else. Right. And then they have another half a day. Well, that iPod's only battery's only going to last 1 year.
And that was one of the tips that now has come out. Apple has a battery website on their main site talking about iPod batteries, laptop batteries. Same issue with laptops.
Right.
If you're using your iPod in your car, get the cigarette lighter charger. Keep your iPod charged, then you don't have to worry about the discharge cycles.
Right.
If you're using it in your office on your desk, dock it with your computer so it stays charged.
Right.
So basically what ended up happening is that Apple created a battery replacement policy. For about $100, you send your iPod into Apple, and they'll replace the battery and send it back to you. There are third-party companies that will do the same thing, and it works out to about $50 for the battery and about $50 in labor, which is pretty cheap considering how difficult the iPod is to get apart. Right. And that was one of the other points of the lawsuit. Why isn't the battery user replaceable? And Apple responded to that charge by saying batteries are hazardous waste, and most people throw their batteries in the garbage, and you're not supposed to. You're legally not allowed to throw batteries in the garbage. You have to go to a hazard. And this is, the AA's you buy for your TV remote control. They're supposed to go in your hazardous waste recycling center, which your garbage company will tell you about. So Apple decided not to make the battery user replaceable to stop all these waste materials from ending up in landfills. So they've also created they've had this for a long time, just not very widely publicized. They have a recycling program where Apple will take back your old computers and old iPods that you're no longer going to use, rather than throw them away, and they take them apart and recycle them. So it's Apple's been doing this for quite a while, and just now starting to publicize it more, especially here on the East Coast. If you're out in California, you can just take it to the Apple's offices,
right,
and drop things off.
Walk up on campus and knock on Steve Jobs' door.
It's a little harder here. So the iPod battery settlement claims for the third generation iPod must be received and postmarked 2 years after the original date of the iPod or Friday, September 30th, whichever is later. One of the keys in being able to respond as a claimant to the settlement is that you have to have the original receipt.
Right.
Which, makes sense. You got to prove you bought it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Just because you got one in your hands
doesn't mean you bought it, and you deserve the money back.
Right.
So they'll give you up to $50 back for a battery you may have replaced, or $50 for replacing the battery you may need to now.
My main opinion.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
On that note, I believe we're going to take a quick break. But we have Ray and Chris and Rob and Bill on the line. So hang on. We'll get back to you after this break with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Well, it's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
Oh, you just had to wait, hesitate that moment, just so you'd be more important. We'd all listen for it. We'd have to hear it. That's nice. It's a good dramatic technique. I'm impressed.
Remember what I said about the buttons.
I'm remembering, and I'm complimenting you. I'm sorry you don't understand that. Next time I'll hold up a sign. Our next caller is Ray from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
Hello. I got an older PC, Windows 98, and it doesn't matter if the machine is on all day or it's on for a half an hour. It may happen. It may not happen. It may happen twice a day, but you'll be using it, and all of a sudden the monitor will just go blank. I hear a click, and the monitor goes blank, and then if I do a Control-Alt-Delete and reboot it, it all comes back. And I can't quite figure why it would be doing this. And it might do it 2-3 times in a day, and it might not do it for a bunch of days.
Do you have another computer you can test with?
Not a computer. I put another monitor on when that happened, and the monitor was still dark.
The same thing happened.
Yeah.
So it's probably the computer. You know, it could be the computer or the monitor. We had a machine this week that did the same thing, and we were leaning toward a thermal problem, something overheating in the computer and shutting down the monitor. One thing you can check is the sleep settings in your energy saver control panel and in your BIOS to see when the monitor's set to go to sleep.
I got that set to never.
On both?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, check that, because they work against each other. We recommend that you turn it off in the BIOS entirely and let Windows handle it.
Now, this wouldn't have anything to do with a video card problem, would it?
That was going to be my next thing, is that if there is, in fact, something not quite right with the video card, and as Steve says, it overheats or whatever, it could be sending a signal to the monitor to shut itself off.
Because I did have that replaced a little while back.
The pop is what worries me. It's kind of hard to do, but stretch the monitor cable as far as you can to set the computer and monitor as far away from each other as you can.
Mm-hmm.
When the pop happens, try to listen to exactly where it's coming from.
Okay.
And if it's a pop on the computer, it's probably a circuit frying somewhere. If it's in the monitor, it could be one of the high-voltage capacitors.
But if it's happening on two different monitors...
It's probably the computer.
Or it's the power source you have it plugged into. But that's less likely, because rebooting shouldn't fix that.
Yeah.
Right.
So I kind of have to... Where is the monitor plugged in? To the computer or to...
The wall.
It's plugged into a separate, outlet, like into the wall.
I haven't seen many computers these days that have the monitor pass through anymore.
Well, but he's got a Windows 98, and so that's why I wondered.
Yeah.
I would tend to think that it's something in the computer, particularly since a different monitor did it. I have to agree with Steve. I didn't mean that to sound like it was a painful thing, but I agree with Steve that it's probably the video card having a problem. But definitely check to see that the stuff in the BIOS is all turned off, and that all the power settings are being controlled by Windows 98 itself. Possibly that if it didn't happen before you got the new video card, and it started happening after you got it, it may well be that it's just not a good video card. That happens once in a while. You know, they make a million a day. There's going to be a certain percentage that are just not good.
And if it's a brand new video card trying to run on a really old computer, it may not quite be compatible.
Exactly. Our next caller, Chris. From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Not too bad. I have a Pavilion PC. It's a year and a half old. And last week I updated my antivirus and restarted the computer afterwards, and it came up with a missing or corrupted file message, and I couldn't start Windows. So I've gone through HP support and tried to use the CDs to restart Windows. That didn't work, and they had me make a floppy to try, and that didn't work. So they're telling me that I may have a problem with my hard drive or my motherboard. And I'm wondering if there's something else I could try before I try replacing one of those two items.
Well, I think they're probably right. If in fact, what happened was when you restarted the machine, you couldn't get into the hard drive at all.
Right.
The restore CD won't let you into the hard drive at all. If the restore floppy won't let you into the hard drive at all, it is either the hard drive or the controller card. Now, the problem is with most machines, the controller card is part of the motherboard. The real problem is that you aren't going to be able to figure this out without spending a little money.
Okay.
You can pick up another drive and see if that fixes the problem.
Okay.
If not, well, I don't know what to tell you at this point in terms of buying a drive. You can buy some fairly small, cheap drives.
Go to the Hamfest and find a cheap, 4 or 5 gig drive for $10 and see if that works.
Right.
Okay.
Spend $50-$60 and get a big drive.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, then it's definitely the controller card. You can pick up a controller card pretty cheap, turn off the one on the motherboard and plug it into a slot. But again, that's going to cost you $20.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way you're not going to get out of this without spending a little money. The cheapest thing to do is to buy the card and try that first, because that's only about $20.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Sure. That's one of the things that is nice about being a vendor, you've got extra pieces to try.
Yeah.
So when somebody says,
let's go to the cabinet, grab a hard drive.
Grab a controller and see which fixes the problem, whereas the average individual has to go out and buy stuff. Listen, we've got a couple more people on the line, but we have to take a quick break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
For over 15 years, it's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. You want to say your name?
I'm Dave Francesco.
Very nice. On Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Nepotism never hurt anybody, I've always said. Particularly when it's just a voice on the air, it's not a big deal. Our next caller is Rob from Sodas Point. Welcome, Rob. What's your question?
Hi. I got two real little ones for you. The first one being is my daughter forgot her password in order to log on to Windows.
Uh-oh. All right. Here's the important question. What version of Windows?
It's XP.
And was she a regular user or just a regular user or what?
She actually changed the name in the administrator and put her name on it, and then...
Okay, you're done then.
Is there another administrator account?
No. I would say
yeah,
no.
You're done.
Here's the deal.
Okay.
Every system needs an administrator who isn't an 8-year-old child. Every system needs an administrator that never logs in except to fix problems.
Right.
Everybody else should be just a user. And they should never have that administrator password.
Right.
Then, when somebody forgets their password or screws up, the administrator can log in, change the password, and get them back on. But if you forget the administrator password, you're pretty much done. I'm sorry.
So the fix is...
Reinstall Windows.
Oh, reinstall Windows.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, that's not such a bad thing. I just have to then get a new code from Microsoft then.
Yeah.
There is
I don't know that you're going to – how much of your stuff you're going to lose.
Right. Well, there isn't a whole lot on there, so.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Well, okay, I'll
you may not
that.
Need the you may well you may not need the code, but I would certainly have them on the line when I did it just to be on the safe side.
for
next time when you set it up, create an administrator who never logs in and don't give anybody the password. And then make everybody else just the user. That's a pain in the neck if you have to install software because the administrator is going to have to do it. But it also means that the kids can't install viruses, which is a good thing. So that's what you want to do is make sure that your daughter doesn't have the administrator password. Our next caller, Dave from Sodas. Also from what is everybody from Sodas today?
My first guy was Sodas Point.
This is Dave just from Sodas.
Hi,
Dave. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
My workplace has two broadband connections, one's DSL, one's cable.
Mm-hmm.
The business computers are all networked through the DSL.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to, and there's a wireless router on the cable modem. What I'd like to do is take advantage of the wireless network at my home, which is approximately 700 feet away. What do we do to expand that network?
A really big antenna. It's called a Yagi antenna.
Yeah.
Highly directional. You need one at each end. They're about $500-$600 a piece.
Ooh.
Or
that much.
Or you get a Pringles can and a 3-foot wooden dowel. dig around the internet. Actually, Robert Cringely, who's a technology columnist for PBS, did this, and it was a great story a few years ago. He has a house up the mountain, and there's no high-speed internet, so he got a telescope to see people down the mountain and put in these really expensive antennas. And people started reporting back that you can make a Yagi antenna out of a Pringles can, which has the aluminum interior coating, and a wooden dowel. So basically that's what you need is either a really long wire or high-gain antennas to push the signal that far.
Also, one of the weekly publications, eWeek or the other one, Something World, just did a report on long-distance wireless solutions.
The record that I'm aware of is about 20 miles, a lighthouse.
They aren't cheap, though, Dave. You're just going to have to suck it up if that's really what you want to do. It's not cheap. We have to take a break, but we'll be back on the other side of the news. The news being done today by the magnificent Rob Linton today. But we'll be back with Steve Ray, Rob Linton. We've got some folks on the line. We're going to talk about the new look on the website, the poll, all kinds of exciting things.
Oh, just say, go down to the Ham Fest today, and you'll probably find really cheap Yagi antennas.
Yes, you probably
down
will.
At the Dome.
Head for the Ham Fest at the Dome and talk to them. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and me, Nick. And
you
all
said
of
Dave
you.
Again. Dave and Steve.
Dave and, not Dave, on Soundbites.
This is it.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton. You're looking at the button.
I am looking at the button.
And you're looking like it's going to press itself, so I pressed it for you.
I've never had to
it's
press the
pressed
button.
Pressed itself
comes
every time. Well,
every time for the
years.
Last 4 years.
High maintenance.
Itself. Now, all of a sudden, you change the rules, and I'm supposed to know them.
High
just automatically
talents.
Know them.
High maintenance talent.
What are you on today? What is it that you've got? Because I clearly need some.
He's just high on life, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. That's right.
Let me back up a second to our wireless question we had just before the break.
Sure.
Most of the wireless router companies have antenna range extenders. It puts a bigger antenna on that the box itself, and you get maybe another 100 feet. One of the problems there is the caller wanted to go 700 feet. So you can also put repeaters on, about $100 for a repeater. Every 100 feet,
right.
So you'd have to find an outlet to plug it into every 100 feet.
And it also depends on what's between you and the other thing.
Yeah, so trying to get a clear signal 700 feet, that's when you need the high-gain directional antennas.
And they are not cheap. They're simply not cheap. Listen, before we get back to the phones, we have a couple people on the line. Please hold on. We'll get to you shortly. But first, I want to talk a little bit about our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. We have a poll every single week. Last week's poll was about the anti-spyware bill now in Congress. 297 of you voted, making it number 105 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each one of you. The two choices were the anti-spyware bill now in Congress will be incredibly effective, or oh, please. And not shockingly, oh, please had 94% of the votes. There are most of us who do not believe that that bill will have any effect whatsoever on anything. This week's poll is we have had a great story this week. A rumor. It is only a rumor. We want to hasten to say this is, up until tomorrow at least, only a rumor. The rumor is that Apple Computer plans to announce tomorrow at the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference in San Francisco. They plan to announce that they are scrapping their partnership with IBM and switching their computers to Intel microprocessors. Now, this is only a rumor, but we're really interested in how you would feel about that. What you would find? Oh man, I can't get this thing to stay on. Whether you would find that even vaguely interesting, I guess, is really what I'm asking. The deal is that up until now, Intel processors have been used basically under Windows PCs and under Linux and with Linux PCs, and the Apple world has gone with the Motorola and now the IBM PowerPC processors.
And interestingly, almost every other electronic, you know, cars and refrigerators and microwaves
right.
use Motorola and IBM.
Right, right. On the one hand, if this were true, Motorola wouldn't really lose much in terms of actual dollars because of what you said, how every other device on Earth uses Motorola processors, in terms of actual dollars, The Apple market for them is infinitesimal. But in terms of prestige, they would be losing quite a bit.
Right. And what's interesting is on the other side of the coin, Microsoft and Sony and others are abandoning the Intel platform for the PowerPC for their new game machines.
Right.
The Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 is going to use IBM PowerPC machines. And most of the industry analysts are saying it's not going to happen. From a user standpoint, the expectation is Intel makes cheap products, so an Intel-based Mac would be cheaper. The cost of the CPU is a very minor consideration in the overall cost of the computer.
Right.
The main reasons PCs are so cheap is you've got thousands of companies making hundreds of products, shipping millions of motherboards, so they can make a dollar on each one.
Right.
And still make a fortune on them.
Right. Well, but that might be it. I mean, if you move to an Intel processor, you move to the Intel supporting motherboards. And that may be what's cheaper. In other words, the problem is that IBM can only make a certain number of motherboards, sell a certain number of motherboards, and therefore has to charge a higher percentage of each for their own profit. Whereas you're right, with an Intel motherboard, if I sell a million of them and I only make a buck on each one, I still make $1 million. So.
Yeah.
That does make a certain amount of sense. The problem is, and we've discussed this off the air, Apple's already changed their way of doing things three or four times, and they were much more minor than changing the entire basis of the code. And yet each time they lost market share, and they lost developers, and they lost users. And to do it again at this juncture is certainly risky.
The biggest technical problem is the big Endian versus little Endian.
Right.
Which, if you know what that means, you know it's a huge technical problem. Intel chips are one way and the IBM chips are the other way, and it makes a very difficult transition.
Right, and you have to, people have spent a long time learning the way that the Motorola and now IBM chips do things, and writing code and tweaking their compilers and everything else, and now they'd have to start all over again, and it's an interesting problem. But our question is a little simpler. We just want to know what you think of a Mac OS on Intel hardware. The choices are Yeehaw, Sounds Intriguing, I'll Never Give Up My Windows, and Can't Touch the Penguin, Baby. Now, I realize, and I apologize to each and every one of you for this, I realized I left off the choice of Blasphemy, but... Even so, 64 of you have voted, and 55% of you so far think it sounds intriguing. So head on over to soundbites.org and vote. And when you're done voting, you'll see at the bottom of the poll there is a little yellow box. And if you click on the Give Us Your Opinion link, it will take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Oh, man. Now, that's classy. That's classy.
Reminds me of that Doctor Who episode I just saw.
Okay, but that's Rob Linton, class extraordinaire. I was nowhere near it. But head on over to asknick.com, and then you can put in your... asknick.com. See, there, that's classy. And but then again, Dead Silence would have been classier than the first thing you did. And then you can enter your thing. And then take a look around. Ask Nick. You might find yourself interested in being there. In addition, when you're done, though, come back to soundbites.org and check out our forums where we have the coolest people on earth. Check out the FAQs and the links and all the other neat stuff that's there. Please also take a note of the new look to the website. I actually love the old look. It was absolutely unique. There was nothing else on the internet like it. The problem was it was slow because it was all graphic. All those side polls were graphical, and it was pretty slow and pretty intensive on older machines. So this is all CSS programming, which means it's completely broken on KHTML, which is the basis behind the Conqueror web browser and, unfortunately, the Safari web browser on the Mac. It works under Opera, it works under Firefox, it works under Internet Explorer, but it doesn't work under Safari. It doesn't work under KHTML. So I'm sorry to all you Safari people, but...
All the site is there, it just doesn't line up perfectly.
It just doesn't line up right, and I'm sorry, but oh well. But at any rate, there's the new look to the site, and I think I've got all the pages done, but... I like it. It's clean. It's simple. It seems to be effective. At least it looks to me like it works. I guess that's something. So let me know what you think, and please vote in the poll and join us on whatever else we're doing. And then definitely leave us your opinion. We're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Jack from Tonawanda, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's simple in a sense. I'm a sightless operator. I've been using computers since about 86, and I've gone through the speech, screen readers, JAWS, window wise, all this stuff. But I'm thinking of making a big change to Linux. Problem is, I can't find anywhere. Do you know anywhere where there's a screen reader or an audio program that will work with it?
Ooh, that's a lovely question. A screen reader for Linux.
I know they have Override, Voice Command on like SUSE 9.3.
There are a couple. There's one called SpeakUp at linux-speakup.org. I've not used any of these. Okay, I got to be honest.
Okay.
I have not used these, but there's SpeakUp. There's one called SCR Reader, which is apparently not well thought of. But we have a website. Screen reader software, screen access software. There's the HAL screen reader and stuff like that. We will put it's a fairly lengthy URL, so we will put it up on our website.
Okay.
At soundbites.org. If you go to soundbites.org and scroll down to FAQs and links galore on the right, toward the bottom you'll see a set of links, one of which is I heard a website on your show, the Weekly Links.
Right.
And it'll be up there in just a few minutes.
Oh, okay. And then I've been to the site, and it looks real nice. And then when I'm going to switch over, I'm going into the a complete reset up on, Let's Tango.
There you go.
Let's Dance.
Perfect.
And for security purposes. But I thank you.
We'll have that up at the next break. It is a long URL, and we want to make sure we get it up right. But it'll be up at the next commercial break. Thanks a lot. And good luck on that. It's a pretty interesting idea to move to Linux for all of that. Our next caller is Ed from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi there.
I just wanted to start off with a compliment and hope you'd answer my three questions.
Uh-oh, three. I don't know that we can get to three, but we'll do what we can.
Well, they're simple. The first thing, what is the I have a digital camera, and I'm trying to send one of those 30-second movies.
Yeah.
And I can't, and it's the file is two size, and it's about 17 megabytes. What's the largest Roadrunner will allow me to go, or and is it changeable?
3 or 4 megabytes, and no, it's not.
Hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. What people tend to do is if they're going to do that, they put it up on some sort of a file sharing service and let other people download it. But
or you can use the web space that Roadrunner and every other ISP gives you. You can upload the file to your website. And then have people download it from your website.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know how big a file you can attach if you're using Gmail.
It's it's the server you're sending it through. Because Gmail allows a gigabyte of space saved on your server. Actually, it's 2.5 gigs now or something like that. Gmail may let you send a larger file than that.
So, Gmail accounts are free.
It's being rejected by the server.
By the Roadrunner mail server, yeah. If you
correct,
use a different mail server, you may have different limits.
Right, but unfortunately, you're right. Roadrunner won't accept a 17-meg movie. Although, like we said, if you set up mail with Gmail, that's a whole separate thing and doesn't really go through the Roadrunner server.
Okay.
What's your next question?
Second question was, I see commercials with people using laptops outside. I wonder what they're looking at, because they must be turned off because you can't see the screen.
It depends. A lot of the newer laptops actually are pretty good in the daylight, and particularly if you have it turned so that the screen is its own shadow, so that you're facing the sun and looking at the thing. But you're right. It's laptops outdoors are not that easy, but it is doable.
There's a company called Hoodman that makes screen glare and protection, things like that for laptops, to help with outdoor direct sunlight. And they make full face mask type things for privacy. So you stick your face into the hood, and then no one else can see what's in your laptop.
The cone of silence.
Quick, what's your third question? Very fast.
Well, that third was the. Is there any talk anymore about this WiMAX in the various towns around here? You know, getting this up and running, or
there was a proposal in the county legislature. I'm sure that's not the correct terminology, but there was a proposal in the county legislature to put wireless throughout Monroe County, and it got voted down. I don't know what the current state is.
Generally, the annoyance is the local ISPs are suing the government. It happened in Philly and several other cities. The local ISPs are suing the government to prevent the government from selling broadband because the ISPs think they'll be out of business.
Right.
The ISPs should be competing to be the contractor for the government.
The problem is it's very expensive, and how do you make your money and all of that stuff. But, yeah, right now there's nothing going on, at least locally, for that I know of. I'd love to see it, but who knows? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton. We've got Ed and Ginny and Tim and Bob or Bab? Bob with an A on the line. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAF.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Wham's Glenn Beck.
Let me get
that you can understand. Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. There are several things at work here. First, 512 meg is not a lot of memory when you're talking about 1 hour of video.
Okay.
The second thing is this: when you're doing the transfer, two things are a lot. The speed of the processor is almost irrelevant. What's important is two things. One is the speed of the transfer medium, for example, USB. If your USB and your laptop is 2.0 and your USB on your desktop is 1.1, 1.1 is much, much slower than 2.0. The other thing is how fast are the hard drives themselves, because basically you're saving an hour of video on the hard drive. And if the hard drive on the laptop is much faster than the hard drive on the desktop, then the desktop is going to be much slower, because particularly in 512 meg of RAM, when you're editing video, you spend most of your time moving pieces in and out of the hard drive rather than actually editing. And so consequently, the speed of the hard drive becomes much more important than the speed of the processor.
And also in the processor itself, is it a Celeron or is it a Pentium? How much cache does it have? Your laptop may have more cache. A slower processor with more cache is faster than a fast processor with less cache.
Right. So it's not always about the speed of the processor. It's about the entire system itself. And if, in fact, you've got a lot of and also the speed of the memory. It might be the speed of the memory in the laptop is faster. So it's very hard, without knowing the full specs, to be able to tell you where the bottleneck is. But clearly there's at least one and maybe more. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Rob Linton. We've got some folks on the line. I see Troy from Gates. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. We're going to go to Troy in Gates next. Welcome, Troy. What's your question?
Oh, yeah. I'm fixing a computer for somebody, and they use Outlook Express.
I've
never used any email client. How can I export all of the inbox, you know, send in all those folders and everything?
In many cases, you can't.
Oh, you can't?
If there's an export command in the file menu, it can export it as a, PAB for the personal address book, and the email is another format.
I forget. M, M, NBX, MBX?
Well, it's not a standard MBox. It's a Microsoft proprietary format.
Yeah. What are you trying to import it to? What are you trying to get it to?
Well, I have to F-disk it, you know, wipe everything out, reinstall XP, and I want to put Thunderbird on there. Can I import it to that? Anyway?
Yeah, Thunderbird will read the Outlook Express data file. You just have to find where it is, and it's hidden in application data, Microsoft identities under a long, giant, random string.
Right, and you can actually do this before you reformat, because that will be easier. If you just download and install Thunderbird, when it comes up, it asks you, during the installation, it will ask you, do you want to, you know, import from something somewhere? And you get to pick, and it'll look for what it finds, and it'll have Outlook Express there, and you say, yeah, I want that. Then you go find the files, and it'll import them into whatever you've got. So
then what am I going to do with it after I format the image?
Well, after that, they're all in a single directory. And, again, you can now take that whole directory and save it out somewhere and then reformat the drive and reinstall and put it back in the same place, and there you go.
If you go to Microsoft Knowledge Base Article 270670, it tells you how to back up and recover your Outlook Express data, and one of the things it tells you in there is the name of the file and where to find it.
So, and you can do it that way, too. And in fact, I would do all of that just to be on the safe side. You know, back up the original file, import into Thunderbird, back that up, then reformat and bring it all back, and then if there's a problem, you can do it all again, and that should be fine then. But I would give that a try. Sounds like a good deal right there. Our next caller is...
I'm more intrigued by saying he's never used email.
Well, yeah, I have to say, here he is doing something for somebody in a computer, and he's never used email. He may mean he's never used an email product on a PC.
Never have used Outlook Express.
Right.
He's familiar with Thunderbird, and he probably knows MBox is under Unix.
Right, exactly. So, all right, that makes a little more sense to me than I've never used email. I know a lot of people who've never used email, but they don't then follow it by saying, and I'm fixing a friend's computer. I'm sure that I just misunderstood. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Yeah, I got a new laptop, and it's the ones with these new 64-bit capabilities.
Really?
Yeah, so the Gateway. And I'm running everything right now off a regular, you know, XP professional, but I've gotten Microsoft has, you know, offered to do a trial to this new platform, and, you know, usually first versions have their flaws.
Yeah.
Don't use it on your production machine.
Yeah. If it's your only computer, I'd be a little careful.
Okay.
The problem is not everything is ready yet. 64-bit Windows is ready, but I don't know that there's a 64-bit Office yet. And all of those other programs that you want to run simply are not available in 64-bit. Now, go ahead.
The 64-bit Windows program, is that... Are they having problems with that, or is that a pretty clean program?
It's brand new. Who knows?
You guys,
which is the problem?
We should know. Yeah. But we don't. I don't actually have a 64-bit computer to play with it on for a while yet. So,
okay.
But yeah, we have heard good things about it. We have not. I have personally not actually been able to play with it much. I have to say, however, that I agree with you. Essentially, a 1.0 version of anything. Is not something I would jump to on a box that I want to have running every day.
Okay.
It's fun to play with, but not on your main production machine that you get your work done on.
Yeah, I don't want to take a chance and, you know, follow up the works.
Yeah, exactly. What's the model number of your laptop?
I got a Gateway. It was a 64-bit. It's got a gig of, like, RAM and 80 gigs of memory and...
What's the model number itself? Because we're both trying to find it here.
On their website.
I got it at a local store.
The 7426 has an Athlon 64-bit processor
there you
in
go.
It.
That's it.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Hey,
and
thank
good
you
luck
guys.
With that. Let us know how you like it.
Yeah, you intrigued us. We didn't know any of the normal retail companies were making 64-bit computers yet.
I know. I may pick one
Except
up.
Except Apple. They've been shipping one for 2 years now.
Right. I might pick one up and run Linux on it. Our next caller is Tom on a cell phone. I'm sure you're pulled over on the side of the road, right, Tom?
Yes, we are now.
Good, excellent.
Perfectly legal.
I love it when you're legal. Go ahead.
Yeah, the question is this. When I go to open up Outlook, I get hung up in an EXE, which I guess is an execute file. And my CPU uses up 100% of my CPU. And it doesn't do it every time.
Which EXE file is it?
Well, it's different. I don't have them written down right now, but I've given it to our IS people, and they seem to be at a loss. And all I've done up till now is when it happens is I go into task manager, which I was a little reluctant to do to begin with, but I had to do something, and I just closed that out, and everything was all right, but it doesn't do it every time.
It may be a virus executing, seeing you're opening an email program and then sending an email to everyone in your address book, which would be a pretty intensive thing
to
do.
Yeah, it would be.
Well, I've got McPhee. I guess it's McPhee, and
McAfee,
I keep it.
Yeah.
It's up to date.
Well, but that only does viruses. It doesn't do spyware. There's a whole series of things it doesn't do.
Oh, I got the anti-spyware, too, and I did have a couple files it found there that I went ahead and got rid of. I don't know what they were, but
here's part of the problem. The spyware folks are getting a lot better at hiding. That's why we wrote the Security Tango website. If you go to securitytango.com, click on the Let's Dance button, you'll find a whole series of steps that you need to follow in order to get rid of to get rid of 99.9% of all of that stuff. I would suggest you start there because, generally speaking, what you're saying suggests to me that there is a virus somewhere. So I would suggest start with the Security Tango and see where that takes you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. No Dave Enright. He's off partying hardy, and we're here working. Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow. Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ryan.
And I'm Rob Linton.
See, you had to take that pause waiting for Dave to get in there. It becomes a rhythm. Work with the rhythm. We're back to Sound Bites, and we're going to talk to Mike from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Hey, just a question. I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but Churchville is supposedly this year, this summer even, going to install power line connection, power line communication.
Ooh.
You know about it? Is it any good? Should we go with it?
There's a company in town, Current Communications. They have service in other cities already, and they're working on service in Rochester. Apparently, Churchill's going to be one of their test sites.
Yeah, well, this one's supposedly New Visions is the name of the company.
Yeah.
I went to their website. Pardon?
You know what speed it's going to be?
No, they say fast and comparable to a T1. Could that be right?
Well, T1 is actually pretty slow these days. A T1 is 1,500K, which is half the speed.
1.5 megabits per second.
Half the speed of DSL and Roadrunner.
Well, it's going to be a little bit cheaper than Roadrunner. It's going to be something like 32 with taxes or something total.
Well, it's an interesting thing. Basically, what we're talking about here, folks, is getting your internet connection over your power lines. You'll plug a special box into the wall socket, and that will actually bring Ethernet into your house over the power lines.
And that's any wall socket.
Any wall socket, anywhere in your house. So, you know, you don't have to string lines. You don't have to have wireless. You don't have to do anything. If I want to take my laptop in out on the porch, as long as I got a plug on the porch, I plug the little Ether over power plug in, and bang, I've got
Wi-Fi available also.
Right.
So anywhere in your home.
Be in the backyard or whatever, you know, so if I'm up in the attic.
I was curious,
their website,
the New Visions website, seems awful low-tech and simple, and they don't have any news later than 2004 on there. So it seemed kind of strange for something that's so important that it'd be so...
Do you have the right address?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's NV for New Vision, PLC.com. It's really simple looking.
NVTLC?
PLC.
Oh, PLC. Well, that explains.
PLC for power line connection.
Right, got it. How weird is that? I don't know. You know, there are a lot of places that don't put a lot into their websites, and
they're putting it all into their service. And
hopefully,
products.
Putting it all into their service and products, right?
Yeah.
It may well be. It may well be fine. I don't know. I really don't know. But I do know that ether over power is a very difficult thing to do because it requires a lot of cleaning.
Yeah, a lot
and when
of filters.
You get into the, yeah, exactly.
They
when
have
you get
to try to avoid the transformers out here, and they have to bypass the transformers.
So every time you go through a transformer, it filters the signal out.
Right, and so the signal disappears. And also then when you get into your home, think about the older homes that have bad power. You know, it's going to be an interesting problem for them to deal with, but the concept is brilliant, and I'll be very interested in following this, and if anybody from New Visions wants to talk to us, send us an email, and we'll be happy to talk to them about this.
And also, take a look again at DSL and Roadrunner. They're both running specials now for $30 a month, so they're all about the same price.
Right. But if anybody from New Visions or any of the Ethernet over Powerline folks want to talk to us, give us a call. We'll be glad, or email us, and we'll be glad to talk to you about it, bring you on the show, and grill you, put you through the ringer here on the viciousness of Soundbite. Well, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. I want to thank the great Steve Ray and the completely magnificent, you see, you were waiting for me to say, to give you a shot, Rob Linton. Be completely Rob Linton. And I'm Nick Francesco. We're going to be back next Sunday. Hopefully we can convince Dave Enright to join us again, and we'll be back here on the greatest computer show in the known universe, on the greatest news radio station in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's time to get